Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we're giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the 115th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Emma. Today, we've got Alicia Oxy, the host of That One Audition on the podcast. She sits down with us to give us all sorts of insight about being an actor and what directors should say to actors, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, Alicia is an actress. She's been in a bazillion things. She was on Ballers, True Detective, The Purge, a million soap operas, Heart of Dixie, General Hospital, Days of Our Lives, Life Sentence on the CW. Anyway, she's done a ton of stuff, but on her podcast, she actually interviews actors, a lot of very well-known actors. She just had John Bernthal on, Lucy Hale, Michelle Moynihan, and just talks to them about bad auditions they've had.
Or good ones, you know, and the whole creative process. So it's a great kind of meeting of the minds of both what it is to be a working actor and what it is to be a working director and where those two meet.
Yeah, so this is a crossover episode.
But before we get to our conversation with Alicia, I wanted to talk a little bit about our Patreon. It's growing and growing. Things are going great, and we really appreciate it. For those of you not in the know, if you go to patreon.com/justshootitpod, you can contribute anywhere from $1 to $4 to even more to help support our editors, Jay and Chris, and help grow the show. We're trying to do more live events, subsidize that a little bit, pay for a little bit of pizza, pay for a little bit of beer. Don't worry, everyone. The show is always going to be free. But if you have a little bit of extra scratch and you want to help this show grow and show your support, visit patreon.com/justshootitpod.
Cool. So let's jump into it with Alicia Oxy. So we are here with Alicia Oxy.
Yay! I am here.
I said it right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me and chatting.
Yeah. I think that's the part where you say thanks for being on
thanks
my show.
Thanks for being on my show, guys.
Oh,
it's a bonus.
You.
Yes, this will be really interesting.
Yeah, so I think we're going to ping pong back and forth a little bit.
Let's ping pong.
Yeah, between who's hosting who. Yeah.
Yes, no, I would love to know your guys' podcast, how it came to be, and did you guys work together? How did you even meet since you guys are co-hosting this podcast together?
Well, we met through two actors that happened to be our wives.
Ah!
My wife worked on something that Matt was directing that Matt's wife was also on. They met, and then she was like, oh, you got to meet this director. And the four of us went out to dinner. Matt was like, I want to do a podcast about storytelling. And I was like, I want to do a Script Notes, which is like one of my favorite screenwriting podcasts, but about directing. And then Matt emailed me the next day and was like, let's do this. So we just met on the podcast. We didn't know each other at all.
We literally had met one time before we started a podcast together.
And you guys are in episode 115. 115.
Yeah, yeah.
How long have you been doing it?
3 years. Yeah, 3 years.
Three years.
Yeah, probably almost to the day, give or take a week or two.
So as far as format and the idea of stuff, you guys just kind of spitballed, just went forward with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's evolved a decent amount, but also it's pretty loose anyway.
Yeah, you know, like chat. We yeah. always want to have a plan and then we don't. But since we've had Madeline on, we've kind of refined things a little bit. I mean,
I like to say that the guest really guides the conversation.
That's exactly what I say.
But we also will do episodes that are just Oren and I talking about things that we're dealing with. We'll always do kind of a catch up at the beginning of the show just to kind of talk about where we are personally in our careers. Because part of the thesis of the show is just kind of showing people what a working director's life is like on a day-to-day basis, basically, and understanding the process and how long things can take and just getting to know the nitty-gritty of the business of being a filmmaker.
Right, much like you said that everyone hears about the people that are getting the Oscars and then you also kind of hear about the struggling actors, but you don't hear that much about the middle class of, like, the working actors. That's the exact same thing for us with directors. It's like you've heard of Spielberg and Michael Bay. You've heard that it's so hard to make it as a director, but you haven't heard about the people that just like live in LA and are directors.
Yeah, so a lot of our guests are people who you probably haven't heard of necessarily, but are on the
way. But they make a living directing.
Yeah, and have awesome, great lives. And we just kind of want to highlight that you can be a working director. Success doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be Steven Spielberg, yeah. though we're all aiming for it, right?
Aren't we all?
And don't listen to your parents when they tell you it's just way too hard.
Exactly. That's, I think, a big part of it, too, is I always ask people if there was a role model or a mentor early on in their lives. And very successful actors that I've interviewed all have. They can always pinpoint to one person that said,
one person.
You
oh.
can, like, if it was a teacher or their parent that was like, I think you should try acting, or I think that you're on the right path. Like, 99% of them all have that.
So for Just Shoot It listeners, tell us a little bit about your show.
About That One Audition podcast.
Correct.
So I started doing interviews about 8 years ago because I went to an audition in which I flagellated not once but twice while running in a bikini next to a girl who looked like Giselle.
Sure.
Wait, what's flagellating? Is that farting?
Farting. I made a noise that came from my buttocks that I still to this day have not made. Not once but twice. But I was really, really on point with my improv. As soon as the first one happened, I like blamed it on Giselle. And then I did it again. And I had to politely remove myself from the room as the directors and all, I think all the director's friends also just happened to be at this shoot or this, you know, callback. Random girls running in bikinis, like 15 guys in a room. So I went to class that night and I shared that story. And then all these actors start sharing all these different horrible audition stories and funny and whatever. Thought it would be a really fun book, 101 Most Unforgettable Auditions. 8 years later, you know, 250 interviews later, I was like, why am I holding back on all these like gems? Because every time I went to go quit acting, I would sit down with somebody, they would tell me this heroic story or funny story. And I'm like, okay, I can stay in this. So I launched as a podcast about a year ago. So now it's basically a how to, like how I built this for all creatives, mostly actors, but I do bonuses. Like it's so great to have you guys on and just different perspective and how you got to where you are right now, told through various different audition stories. Cause we all audition. You audition for Little League, you audition for your in-laws, you audition when you try to get your kid into preschool, you're constantly on
the hardest
spot.
One.
Ugh, right? It totally is pitching while trying to like hold back how badly you want your kid to get into this school. It's all kinds of confusing. So yeah, that's a little bit of the how the show is going. And we just recorded our 50th episode.
Hey, 50, congrats.
Yeah.
Nice.
And you've had some like big actors on. I listened to like the Lucy Hale episode.
Yeah.
And you had like John Bernthal.
Yes. Michelle Monaghan is my 50th, which was a big... that's really big and personal to me because when I started my career at Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, as soon as I saw it, I wanted her career.
Yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden I could see it. And then I worked with her on True Detective and then having her, and I was a blubbering mess when I talked to her. Like I could not articulate my praise in a smart way, I would say. Also, she had had given me a compliment to my acting, which having your role model then I just was a blubbering mess. So getting to have her come back on the show in the 50th episode and be able to articulate to her how wonderful I think she is and her career. I mean, her career is so
awesome.
so incredible. And she doesn't get hounded by people. Like, she's just getting to go do her art. You know, like, you don't see her, you don't see her spread across every celebrity gossip magazine. She's balancing life
and she's a little bit of a chameleon too, right?
Completely. Yeah. Yeah.
And she does like blockbusters like Eagle Eye with Shia LaBeouf, a surprisingly good movie. And TV shows and True Detective. Yeah,
exactly, The Path.
Which I don't really like that much, but.
Not her fault.
Not her fault. I love her.
She's so great. But yeah, today we released Eve. Like, Eve told me her audition story for Dr. Dre and then getting fired by Dr. Dre. So I just think it's kind of cool how you're mm-hmm. building a creative industry, because you never see that side of it. You always see the like, oh, you were nominated for an Oscar. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that project. You don't get to hear about the fall downs and the getting back up.
Absolutely. And so I feel like listening to your show a little bit, you find there's a lot of recurring themes, right? You talk about connecting dots and like follow through and like long-term careers. What are kind of the big top level sort of ideas that you feel like you kind of find yourself revisiting over and over again?
Time. Creativity takes time. And I think everybody thinks that being creative and having a genius moment idea mm-hmm. means that the next day it's going to be awarded with an audience or awarded with teammates. I think creativity takes, it's like somebody compared it to raising a child the other day. Your child doesn't come out of the womb and crawl and walk and speak. It takes time. So that's, I think, my biggest get after doing all these interviews for so long. And passion. If you are passionate about what you're doing, you allow yourself the time then to create what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So the majority of people that I talk to are 10 plus years in the business. And a lot of it is connecting the dots that you can only do after almost 10 plus years. Like your guys' episode that I listened to was so brilliant about you going to lunch. Which one of you went to lunch? And it was like all of a sudden the next week.
Or me. Went to lunch.
That was went to lunch. And then people are calling. Like, it's just kind of living your life, but then doing the work at the same time and giving yourself the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so something that happens on our podcast a lot, or that comes up a lot, which I am guessing does not come up nearly as much on your podcast, is whether you have to live in LA or not to be a filmmaker. I mean, with acting, I kind of feel like the answer is yes, right?
But I don't think so in the next 5 years. So today I taped something for New York. Last week I taped something for New Orleans. The other day I taped something for Vancouver. I mean, you guys are directors, writer, producers. How often are you guys watching tape versus being in the room now?
Sure, watching tape all the time. But I think the counter is like, how often are you just offering someone or deciding to collaborate with someone based off of the relationship that you have because of proximity?
I think that's where LA or New York, like the, but right. also that's if, where it benefits.
But also, you live in LA. Why are you taping for a show in Vancouver or New York or Houston or whatever? It's because LA has the best actors. Like I mean, I think Matt and I both have, you know, done a lot of commercial projects, or at least have been up for a lot of commercial projects that don't shoot in LA. Mm-hmm. And my first question is,
major markets.
Can we shoot in LA? And if not, can we bring cast from LA? Because I mean, it's like, just so ridiculous the difference between, like, so this is kind of I'm making this up on the spot, so it could be totally crazy, but if I auditioned 100 actors in Houston versus 100 non-union actors in LA versus 100 union actors in LA, like if out of the 100 union actors, probably 90 of them would be awesome. Like I could cast any one of them for this commercial and they would be great. The non-union actors, probably like 40 of them would be awesome. And then the Houston actors, probably like 5 of them would be awesome. You know, that's to me, at least from my experience, the ratio of like amazing talent. And so even when you're not shooting in LA, you're casting out of LA because we have the best actors.
Well, I think there's that idea too. There's that idea of, and all the greats do go because they're trying to go for their best shot, I think, at the end of the day. I just think technology is really changing how we can see ourselves as actors and living in different places. But I do love the idea of the proximity. Like, you're not going to sit down and have lunch in Houston
right.
and then bump into somebody and then be on set the next week because you just randomly stayed longer and ordered another bag of chips.
Right.
But that's why those stories of like going out and interacting with the people like of your city make a difference. And yeah, I don't mean to be a bummer. I mean, have you ever cast anyone, Matt, off tape without seeing them in real life?
I have. I've become increasingly open to the idea, to your point, actually. But I still like to be in the space because I like to chit-chat. Like, there's that, you know, the bit up top when it's like, oh, nice to meet you. Like, oh, you know, I'll take a look at someone's resume. I'll, like, scan for someone I know. Like, oh, you know this person. You know that person. Oh, you trained at UCB. Who was your coach? Like, are you on a team? Just that kind of, like, a few softball questions. That's really a test to see, like, oh, do I want to spend a day with you or not? Because, like, especially if it's a commercial project or something, that relationship is really important. And if you're going to add an additional level of stress, even if you're perfect for the part, I don't really want you to be on set with me.
So when that's a great point for my listeners. So, because some actors are like, I don't want to do the chit-chat. I want to stay in my world. Now I know with commercials, sure, it's different.
Yeah. Right.
But, so you're actually looking for a tool to see, like, how are they going to respond? Can they actually have a conversation with
Absolutely.
Me?
Absolutely. And to be fair, that's almost always in the context of comedy. And I'm going to do a little bit of improv. And so they typically are coming in on, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not like I'm doing, like, a dramatic, heavy scene where I'm like, oh, hey, you know, like, where are your kids going to preschool? Cool. Yeah. Now murder someone, you know. Like,
but we also, Matt and I'd say majority of the work we do is, like, 1 to 3 day shoots, maybe a week sometimes. I mean, we've done some series, but
yeah, I think
I'd say 80% of our work. So we need the actor that can kind of figure it out, like, in 5 minutes, you know?
Completely. Yeah. Not hit your in mark, a rehearsal, say your line, and do everything.
Yeah.
So, because you have 5,000 other things to worry about.
Yeah, it's like when you do, like, a guest star or a co-, you know, like a day player type of TV role. Right. Like, sure, if we're going to cast someone for the whole series, it's a different type of conversation.
Yeah, sure. And we're going to go to coffee. There's going to be multiple, like, rounds of auditions, all that stuff. But, like, for a regular audition, I just want to know that you're not going to be a pain in the butt, that you're not too needy, but that you're nice, basically.
So is there anything that's ever so off-putting? Like, are there any examples that you guys can share of what not to do when you first walk
in?
You would never, like, everyone knows this, but I have a few things for, like, let's say you just moved to LA and you just graduated from, like, the inner school in Nebraska or whatever. Something that I see a lot of people that are brand new do, and I see more guys than girls do this, is, like, try to shake everyone's hand in the room.
Yeah, don't.
That's like,
unless you initiate, if you're a handshaker, that's fine. But, like, I know a lot of casting directors do not like germs.
Yeah, you meaning the director or the casting director initiates. I know it's gotten, I've been here so long now that when people try to shake my hand in a room, I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, sure. You're like, well, all right.
Like, oh, that's a nope. Oh,
and is that a signal to shake everyone else's hand in the room?
Like, I don't take it as that. I usually do the one.
Yeah.
And then
like a nice polite wave.
I just always feel like it's an awkward thing too after somebody does extend for a handshake or a hug, because it's so ingrained in me not that then that's when I become awkward where I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah. Honestly, the only time touching is at all appropriate is if you really, really know a person in the room. Like, if your best friend is the reader, then it's and actually I take it back, not even the reader. Like, if it's somebody who's got, like,
you're talking for the actor.
Yeah, for the actor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, if the casting director or producer knows you and they initiate, for sure, go say, like, hi, pal around, all that stuff.
Right. Or if it's, like, otherwise, a chemistry read or some place where, like, you've almost built a rapport. But I'm talking about, like, the first audition.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially on
commercials. I'm saying don't do it unless you really, really know somebody.
Right. But on commercials, too, a lot of times it's, like, producer, like, creative director, associate director, art director, casting director, reader. And these people go and shake, like, 7 people's hands. And I'm like, you know that you came in an hour after, you've been waiting in the waiting room for an hour. So, like, why are you spending, like, 5 minutes, like, shaking sure, everyone's hands and talking when you know we're just trying to get through real fast?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, something else I have for actors. So when I first moved to LA, both my roommates were actors, Sam and Alana. And I remember Sam would always complain. He'd be like, I was in the audition and the guy was like, one guy was on his laptop, the other guy was, like, eating a sandwich, and then another guy, like, was barely paying attention. And he would get so frustrated. He's like, I'm working so hard for these people, and they are just, like, ignoring me. And so I guess what I would say, like, when I'm auditioning people again for commercials with agency people, a lot of times they're putting out, like, so many fires because the shoot is, like, in a week and we just lost our location. And so, like, you really only need, like, the director and mate, you know, like, there's like whoever's watching you is like the important person to judge your performance.
Right.
So don't, I know it's hard to shake, but
it is rude for sure. And it's okay to be bothered by it, but don't take it to heart.
It's rude, but let's say you're seeing a bunch of actors in one day and you have to eat lunch at some point and you don't want people, like a lot of times, like a casting director will be like, hey, you know, we're running like an hour behind, but do you want to stop for half an hour for lunch? And I'll be like, no, let's just like, I'll just eat and let's just keep going.
You've got a day job to get back to.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it when actors are in the waiting room.
Yeah.
You don't like people. Do you feel pressure if you're an hour behind? Because that's the other thing is I think as an actor, when you walk into the room, you forget that the other people sitting on the other side of the camera are people. Mm-hmm. It's this judgment. And I would love if you guys could talk about, do you feel like you are, be honest, judging the people that are coming in, like from the get-go, where you're like, ooh, why are they wearing those shoes? Because all of a sudden you've been given this privilege to sit behind the camera, and I call it a privilege coming from an actor standpoint.
And it is, without a doubt. We should also caveat, Oren and I are both married to actors. So we have the other side.
I love actors,
Yeah.
So we've heard all the insecurities or frustrations. Like my wife went to an audition like a few weeks ago, and they like changed it last minute to be at someone's house, which is weird. You know, he wasn't there alone. There was like other people and producer and stuff, but it was weird. And then they made her wait for 2 hours because they had this last minute, like half hour conference call he had to listen. And it was like a callback type of situation. And it's like, I would never in a million years do that. I'd be like, hey, I've got auditions right now. I'm not getting on a conference call. Let's push it. There's people waiting for me. And I think Matt is the same way.
We would prioritize the audition because we are aware of the sacrifices an actor is making to be there. But to answer your question, yes, we absolutely are judging them. However,
but not harshly.
We're humans. Just like you look at somebody and think you have a first impression, and that's.
You have zero control over it. And they're so, especially in a commercial environment, but in all like high stakes environments. You don't have control over what you're going to be judged by, and you can't anticipate it. Like, you're nervous about your shirt, and we're, like, thinking about, like, oh, we're casting a person who has different color hair than this person. Or, like, my wife's a redhead. Oh, we can't have two redheads in this spot.
I hate too many redheads in, like, one thing. It totally ruins it.
Yeah, sure. Right, but, you know, a client does think like that. Or, like...
Especially commercials, because it's such a look. And I feel like commercials is, like, the lottery. For an actor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for a director too.
Okay, so share with me that, because you guys are, your bread and butter for both of you is commercials. And then I know that there's a good amount of television episodic in there as far as.
Yeah, Oren's commercial career is better than mine, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both kind of started doing like digital series, and then which kind of turned into branded content. Because, you know, no one was paying for it, so companies had to pay for it. And then, for me, that kind of transitioned into commercials.
Yeah, and I
just have... more like 30-second regular commercials.
I have some of that. I have plenty of experience in that realm, but Oren's commercial career is going better than mine, basically.
But then you have a lot of episodic.
Yeah. I think the slight difference is, like, I have been pushing harder in the episodic world, and so... Yeah, I found kind of recent success in that realm. So, but we both kind of, and also features. Oren has a feature two features under his belt, and I don't. But yeah, we more or less, you know.
But Matt kind of pitches TV shows more. And I mean, I want to do that. I'm just like, if any commercial comes up, I'm like, stop writing, go do the commercial.
I'm a little more aggressive in the scripted world. But basically, we're both on the same lists, whether it's commercial or scripted, all the time. We're like pitching against each other quite frequently. So
would you guys mind, for my audience, walking through how an audition comes to you for a commercial? Like, does your agent call, and what is the pitch when you guys go in? Like, give me an example of you guys going in against each other. I'm just curious.
Oh, sure. So there's kind of two, well, in a commercial scenario, basically the, like, a bunch of different sales reps will pitch our names up against this product, basically. And then, you know, agency will look at it. They'll kind of narrow down their kind of top three.
And they're going off your resume, or are they going off your commercial reel?
Our commercial reel. So our reps will put together like a custom stack of spots that we've done. Yeah. Like,
by the way, we did an episode called How Commercials Work or something.
Yeah. Oh,
and it's great. Like, it spells this from like A to Z, like an hour conversation, because it's surprisingly complicated.
Yeah. I'm doing the Cliff Notes version. But yeah, if you really want
to
know.
And like, then I'll send my audience to that episode. What number do you know?
I think it's like 80 or something. Or
we'll put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes.
It is quite dry. It's like, if you really, really want to know, and it's very good, but it's like, it's as inside as you get, basically.
Yeah. It does. I think the insight that an actor might get is, which you probably know. Have you done a lot of commercials?
Yeah.
So I obviously... In TV, you've done a ton of TV, which the role of the director is one thing there. But in commercials, the director does not, like, tends to not have quite that much power.
Yeah, that's the important thing.
Which the actors don't really realize. And, like, even, so I'm doing these 10 spots. We're casting 20 actors. And we saw 90 actors in one day just for the callbacks.
This is literally happening.
Yeah,
as
this
we
happened
speak.
A couple days ago. I was so exhausted by the end of the day. I was like begging them. I was like, please, let's do our selects tomorrow. You know, I started scouting at 7 a.m. today. It's like 10 p.m. now. Like, I just had to talk to, I mean, we have another episode that's worth listening to, which is five directors talking about auditioning people. For us, it's like an audition because this is the first time we've met the agency people usually. And they're judging how we work with actors.
The agency people are the people who originated the spot.
Yeah.
And is the agency really who's picking the actor? Or you guys are now in this room with a group of people that you have just met.
Right. That day we met.
So they will say no, the director is, but the answer is 100% yes, the agency is picking.
So the end of my story is, by the end of the day, I was like, let's just do it tomorrow. And then the agency was like, nah, we'll just pick them. And they just choose. But they're not even the final say. So they'll choose their top three and they'll recommend one. And then they'll send it to the client. And then the client will look at all the tapes from that day. And then they'll decide if they want to go with the recommended actors or not.
So if you really have a select, if you're like, oh, I love this actor, I've worked with them before, I have a good feeling, you really have to do some salesmanship to like get that person sold and tell them why they like them and why they're right for the spot. But like, I can tell you from experience multiple times, I've had actors that I disliked end up getting cast, like wouldn't even be called back. And someone's like, well, we should call them back. I think they're really funny. And like got the spot.
And they got the spot. And then how's working on the spot?
I mean,
for
I was right.
At like least you got that.
Sort of, except for that it's still the spot that I'm going to.
And then it's representing you. Right. Then is that one of those things that you just don't put on your reel later?
Exactly. Yeah. You just like some you just don't show, you know?
Just like in acting where you're like, I just hope that just never sees the light of day.
I'd say most jobs you don't put on your reel.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing too, I think as a creative too, that when you asked earlier, what's the one thing that I've learned? You never see Tom Hanks's first like commercial or TV show.
Right, unless it's like on The Tonight Show.
Exactly.
As a joke.
But nowadays, you are, as an actor, any creative, as a director, as a writer, anybody can see your first work. And it's not like, oh, you know, good job at attempting to do this. This is what you could do better. It's like now you're just marked.
You're just judged. And especially if like you're doing a good job in a bad show. That's really rough. Like, it's hard to see past that, you know? Yeah. I would say in terms of tips for actors, making a reel that is exemplary of your work readily available is very valuable. I'm in the middle of casting a feature right now, and we're looking for great people, and our casting directors are sending us, like, great names. But because they're of, you know, a certain level, they're... isn't a ton of stuff available. So like I'll get stuff sent from their agents or whatever. But for the most part, it's not obvious what their best work is.
And what do you mean a certain level? Like high level or low level?
High level.
Like name talent.
Name talent, because it's like all of their stuff is
and
getting
just
stripped
like,
from YouTube or whatever.
So you don't have a comprehensive reel just to watch.
We'll get, you know, sometimes an agent will send stuff or like a casting director will get it. But if the name is just thrown out there, right? and we don't, you know, we're kind of deciding like, oh, I've got to name a list of 20 names. I want to narrow that down to the five that I'm going to ask to really see materials on. I'll Google them, right? And I cannot tell you, we're casting a male lead right now. 90% of the videos that you can find on the internet are of them shirtless. It's like a fan montage of like
and you're
a dude who's like on a CW show, like taking, and look, they're jacked. They look great. But that's not what I'm looking
that's
for.
That's not what you're looking for.
And only shows on a CW show.
So. Sure, there you go.
Yes. Yeah. I did keep my shirt on. You know, at CW, they do make the girls keep their shirts on, not the guys.
If they could get away with it. Yeah. But do you know what I mean, though?
It's absolutely. Like, well, I think also as an actor, you get to a certain level, and I'm not at that level, but I'm assuming at a certain level, you're like, oh, people know my work. And you stop investing in the real. Sure. And I had a meeting today where it was like, no, you have to constantly, that's how you're selling yourself.
Absolutely.
And you have to stay on top of your real, your materials, and also make sure that the other stuff gets buried on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, how definitely. Do you get things off?
Right.
Yeah. If you have a reel, then people don't have to go to YouTube to hunt for stuff.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Exactly.
You could avoid the shirtless Googling that happens.
A lot of press materials, too. You're like, it's the same sort of thing of like, oh, what chit chat is like. It's like, oh, I just want to see, like, am I going to be okay to spend 3 weeks with this person or not?
Well, and that's the thing too. It's like camp. I think a lot of people don't realize that they haven't been on set yet. Like mm-hmm, you are, it's full intense camp. The rest of the world kind of falls away and you're trying to collaborate, hopefully, and make this piece.
Absolutely.
Especially as the director, as the helm. Yeah. And I'm sure you don't want to worry about your actors.
Yeah. And like publicity is a funny thing where it's like, oh, do they... You know, they were having a bad day, but if that's all I have to go off of and I can't, you know, schedule a coffee with them or it's going to be 2 months before they're available or whatever. It's so tricky. Oren, you were going to say something, though.
Yeah, our friend that introduced us to you, actually, Carter McIntyre, he had a pretty good reel that I saw. I mean, it might have been a couple of years at this point, but he's, you know, he was like the lead on a bunch of TV shows. He was on a J.J. Abrams show. He's been on a ton of TV. I don't think he's like a household name. You know, but there are some people, he was on Drop Dead Diva for like 3 seasons.
He has a shirtless montage on YouTube?
Yeah, I'm sure. He probably does. If you don't, we're going to Google it later.
Now, can we make a note of that, please? Just make sure. That's in the show notes.
But his reel was probably like 5 scenes from TV shows that were, he probably had like 2 action scenes where it's like him saying something funny and then like chasing some people and shooting some people. And then he had like a dramatic scene. And I don't know, I felt like it was like really good. It was simple. But it was like, hey, look, I can do this. I can be funny. I can be dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I can do action. And I've been on these TV shows.
Well, that's a good question. So I had an agent once say to me about my reel. They're like, I don't know how to pitch you. It's like you're different in every part. And I sat there for a long time and I was like, thank you. And she was like, I don't know if she intended that to be a compliment. It's like she didn't know how to pitch me. I was like, but that's my job as an actor. So as directors, when you are actually seeing reels, do you like seeing the diversity in which a person can play so many different things in 3 or 4 minutes? Or do you like being like, okay, the shirtless guy obviously plays this one role and he plays it well?
That's a great question.
I like diversity. So my friend Avi, who's been on the podcast, he is like really, really funny. I just helped him with his reel and he had sent it to me. And he's done like 3 or 4 dramatic roles. And so that's what he had in there because they look the best and they're with like kind of recognizable faces. And I was like, dude, this reel, you're great dramatically, but no one can tell that you're funny, you know, from this reel. And like, to me, that's you. And I helped him recut it. And I was like, I'm just going to put, I know every agent tells you, do not put a montage on the front of the reel. But I think like, for me, I don't get your spirit from this reel because it's just you like, you know, fighting with your wife and then like making fun of some guy. Like, I want to see you being funny, you know, and I know you're super funny. So I don't know.
Montage going into then regular scenes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, regular scenes, reels are impossible to watch.
They are so challenging.
They're so boring. And that's what I almost was going to interrupt Matt before when he says he loves to see a good reel because so many times, I mean, we're casting a lot of newer actors, right? And like on LA casting, that's like usually the interface that we have.
I mean, I'm explicitly talking about
Well, yeah. Like, names is, to me, that's like a whole different approach.
When we say names, I think, just to be clear, not names that any of us would recognize unless you watched that specific show.
Right, some main character from Walking Dead or something.
Yeah, totally. That's a perfect example. Or not even a main character. Do you know what I mean?
Or like recurring.
Yeah, recurring. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, their resume is cool. You've heard of plenty of the shows that they've been on, but like you wouldn't know their name.
Like me.
That's a perfect example.
I'm a good example where people are, they see my resume and they're like, oh, you've been working for a while. And it's always the shocked, like, oh, I don't know. I love that question. Tell me how I know you. When you're like sitting on an airplane and I'm like, I don't know. What shows do you watch? They're like, I'm so sorry, I don't know you. And I'm like, not a lot of people do. Like, it's
And you're,
the working actor.
You're probably offer only for plenty of, like, indie movies.
No. And that's the other thing I would
do. Do your agents tell casting directors you're offer only?
No. I've literally can count on my hands how many offers I've had. And when I get them, I am totally shocked. Like, I'm like, what? I almost dropped the phone once when I got an offer because I was like, I'm going to take a break from acting. And literally the moment I said it, an hour later, I had an offer. And I was like, I haven't had an offer in like 3 years. So that's not – and I truly like winning the part. I like knowing that you've paid for me and you've bought what I'm selling.
Sure.
And I also –
There's extra pressure on an offer.
There is. And I've been on so many sets – thankfully, where I'm not the number one, I wasn't the offer, and I've seen the offer come in, and then the director and the offer creatively collide, and then the project's at the mercy of that tension. Mm-hmm. Versus the director being like, "I picked you, and now we've all have this like collaborative journey that we're on, hoping that we can get the best art." So. Sure. I go back and forth on offers, and I ask every actor that I also usually interview, like, what is your feeling on offers? And most people love them.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't like it, right?
But a lot of times, I was attached to this movie. I ended up not doing, but it was kind of your level names that we were talking about, and instead of having them audition, we would, like, go get coffee with them, like the producers and I would meet them.
Sure.
And it's not like we'd offered the role yet, but we're trying to get the vibe and get your read on the script.
I love that. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love a good conversation with a director or writer. I sometimes wonder, for me personally, I'm not speaking on other actors, if sometimes I come in too hot because the way I study characters and I get excited, especially if I'm excited or passionate about it. This is another good question I want to ask is how often, especially when you're sitting down with people for features or episodics, how often do you like hearing notes or suggestions from actors? Because I feel like sometimes that can burn you getting the job.
Oh, I've been burned. I'd say like 50% of the jobs I'm burned on because I'm like, this is great, but don't you think it would be like a little, like this feels really similar to this thing that is out right now. What if we change it a little bit to be like this? And then they'll hire the director that just loves the creative.
That just wanted to do exactly what was on the page.
It happens to me all the time.
I think coming with ideas is wonderful. And I think that if a person is self-aware enough to be like, you know, I know that this needs work. And what would you, like if they offer, you know, or if they ask for notes, I think you can go for it. I think that the safe space is in like, oh, like here are things to plus the material that's already there. But, you know, in the event that it's a more contradictory note of like, you know, this should be a totally different thing than what you're thinking of, which surprisingly happens, that I would stay away from. You know what I mean? Like,
you would steer clear.
Kind of stay in the lane of like what the creative mostly is. You
but know? Do you think it matters if you wrote it or not?
Well, potentially. Yeah, potentially someone is maybe would be a little more territorial if they had written it themselves. But I think if you've signed on, hopefully they like it enough to want to defend it or to feel maybe a little injured, you know, because it's a personal thing, you know.
It's so personal.
And early on in those relationships, it's like you kind of have to let the conversation evolve a little bit before you can tell whether or not they're going to really be open to things, you know.
Well, I think I'm sure you've done this. We've all done this. We attach ourselves to a project that we feel is like not that great, but we can hopefully push it and fix it. So I did this Lifetime movie, right? And
We had to say the title. I always love the title.
It was called A Mother's Rage.
And that's actually a nice one.
It was originally called Road Trip. And I was like, there's already a movie called Road Trip. And they're like, we don't care. But then I think Lifetime likes to have their title start with A's. So that they're at the top of the VOD list. So we had Lori Loughlin for it. And
Aunt Becky.
Aunt Becky from Full House.
It was amazing.
And she... Like, I know she's, like, super smart. I talked to her on the phone. She seemed, you know, she's obviously acted in so many things. One thing, I know you did a lot of soap operas. She did soap operas way before you did. When she did them, she told us a story, was when you had a dramatic scene, they would literally play the dramatic music on the stage and record it. It was live.
Wait, live?
Yes.
The soundtrack was live as your...
So she would be like, Russell, what did you say? And then they would be like, dun, dun, dun. Yeah, and then she said, like, the first few times it happened, it, like, startled her so much. But, you know, in soaps, they just go so fast. And they're shooting so many pages a day that they just kind of went with it. But anyway.
She was like, wow, we love that thing you did at the end. The surprised look. It really sells the moment.
Because she was like 16 or something when she started doing soaps. Anyway, I knew she is like this, you know, solid actress, so much experience. And I knew the script was like not great. And I was like, well. And she had said yes to it. And so I knew we had this big table read coming. All the actors were going to come, including her, and read it. And then at the end of the table read, I was going to be like, so what do you guys think? Any notes? And that was going to be my moment to fix the script because she's the star and she's like Lifetime is
making
this movie.
You can leverage her credibility.
Because of her. Yeah. And she goes, and I mean, the script had major problems and it was like, you know, just some questionable dialogue and just all these issues. And it's not any one person's fault. Like I didn't pass on the script and a friend of mine did. And it was just like had issues. And she goes, yeah, this is great. Love it. Can't wait to shoot it.
And I was like, "See my kids, bye."
Yeah,
I was like,
"She's
no.
like, I know exactly what this is, and we could spend our heart and souls trying to make this better, but let's just go with what it is."
Yeah, and I was like, "Okay, no notes. Anyone else? Like, does this part work for you?" And they're like, "Yeah." And I was like,
"You're like, is okay, nobody else seeing what I'm seeing?
I'm wrong about everything that I think I know." Anyway, of course, flash forward to like 3 weeks later, we're on set, and she's like, "Why am I saying this? Like, this doesn't make any sense." I'm like, I know it doesn't make any sense. Why are you just bringing this up now?
She's like, I'm not the director.
And I was like, well, what would you say? And she's like, I don't know. I think I could just do it without saying it. And I was like, yeah, I love that. Let's just do it. We do a take and the producer/writer is like, she didn't say the line. The script too right. I'm like, I know, but we're going to try it. And she's like, and then basically they made us just shoot it as scripted.
She probably knew that from the get-go. Sure. Was like, this is, I think also that's the thing as an actor, and I wonder for writing and directing, if you get into a formula and you know like, oh, soaps are only going to let you do so much, or Lifetime's only going to let you do so much. So at a certain point in your career, when you take the money job, do you just grin and bear it? Because as an actor, I still have a hard time because I'm like, it's my face.
Sure.
I'm the one who's saying
you
this
stuff.
You
are the most vulnerable. Yeah, for sure.
And like,
I just won't put it on my website.
Yeah.
But then
they dig that stuff up and they put it on YouTube.
But also you're spending 4 days on it and we're spending like 6 months on it.
But that's what I mean. If you're spending 6 months, like, does it ever get under your skin as a creative where you're like, I know this doesn't make sense, but...
In a weird way, the more successful you get, the more you have to be okay with other people making some decisions you're used to making. That's the thing I feel
That's
like.
That's a good
I've,
point.
You know, like
I'm the opposite.
But I feel like you. This is literally what you're living through right now. I know what you're talking about.
No,
I mean, like, you know, like, especially directing scripted side, it's like, producers are a bigger deal. Like, talent is a bigger deal. Like, the.
Than you,
it's
than
a conversation
role?
Instead of just like being able to say, hey, we're fixing this line, you know, and you're lucky when you have the authority to just go ahead and like tweak it and fix it and not make it a big deal. But like,
right, no,
having those conversations, you have to pick your battles more and more the higher up you get and the more powerful your producers are.
I'm not saying that I don't like it when other people make the decision, I'm saying that. I don't like it when other people make bad decisions, you know? Like,
sure, but I'm saying you have to just deal with it.
Right, or as we use the term leveling up pretty much, as we're like trying to like climb our way like, as you're working, like, you know, right now I'm working with, like, a pretty cool agency, and, like, you know, hopefully I'll be working with, like, the big agencies and the Ogilvies and the BBDOs and, like, people where it's, like, the top creatives in the country, you know, the people that are making Geico commercials and Little Caesars commercials and HBO shows.
They know better, is what you're saying.
And then, so to me, that's, like, the number one thing I look at in a project is, like, who is the team? Am I, we're going to get on a call, are we, like, jiving, are we, like, liking each other's ideas, are we making each other laugh? And that's, like, when we're aligned. The agency I'm working with now, they, like, use the word aligned a lot, which I think is, like, a pretty common agency word. But they're like, okay, cool, so now we're aligned, we're going to go to the client and say that. And so they check in with me. So to me, that's the thing. But if someone, if they have a really bad idea.
My point is, you have to align with people, right? And, like,
you have to compromise.
Exactly. Like, way back in the day, when you're just making your own web series that you wrote and you're directing yourself, you align with yourself and that's it, you know? And the more you level up, the more other parties you have to satisfy or at least consult with before you get to be like, this is the actual decision.
Well, that's what I think is also interesting from an actor's perspective. And also, I've directed a couple of things and now I'm transitioning into more of that. But I always look at the director as the boss. And it's so interesting to hear you guys talk about how your hands are kind of tied and you have to align with everybody else. And I think a lot of actors or anybody else on set always look to the director as being the boss man.
Sure.
Not knowing that your hands are also tied.
Yeah. I early on will say, like, okay, I want to be the only person who's talking to the actors because I want them to be able to turn to me and know I am the authority. Like, I'm not going to confuse them. This is the clear delineation of, like, I am the person you talk to get information. But all that time where I'm like, you know, hey, that was really great, let's take five. That 5 minutes, I'm not going to have a cigarette or something. Like, I'm, like, back with the other village full of suits who are all, like, going to tell me what they think. And then I'm going to have to deal with their bad ideas and then, you know, refilter back to you.
Yeah. Right. And as an actor, if you ever get this note, especially on a commercial, which is bigger smile, bigger smile.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is 100% not coming from the director.
I think that's so good to say because I think in acting class, you all, like, you're, at least my coach is constantly being like, the director says this. This is what they, like, this is how you can interpret it because as an actor, you're like, I thought I was smiling.
Sure, yeah.
Like, and then it's a negative. Then you put yourself into a negative headspin versus being in a positive headspin. That's such a wonderful.
Yeah, and it's like I did these spots with Tim Meadows, and he's, you know, he's like the most friendly-looking person in the world. And the agency was like, can you just give us more teeth, bigger smile, more happy? And, you know, we're like on hour 11 of the day or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's necessary. I have a question
for
you.
No, hold on. Before you get into that question, I've got a tip, actually. This is the straight dope for actors. If you ever see a director walk over to the sound person and, like, they're probably, like, and then walk over to you, they've gone to double check and make sure that the client's headsets aren't on. Because the client, so everyone who's wearing a lavalier is mic'd. And so, like, oftentimes those mics are hot the whole time and the clients can hear you direct to the client or to the actor. And so I'll have to go over and be like, hey, kill the mics real quick because I have to, like, reinterpret something or in really dire circumstances be like, listen, just fucking, I know this is a stupid note. Humor me. Smile a bunch on this one. And, like, the sometimes it's not worth it to explain the politics of
that's
all of it.
That's a smart director. I've never done that.
It's brutal. I remember because there's an actor who I won't name who I really looked up to. And I was giving him the stupid, I was younger and didn't know what I was doing. And I was giving him stupid notes. And he was much more experienced than me. He covered his mic and was like, are they telling you to say this stupid shit? And I was like, yes. Yes, I'm glad you figured it out. I'm like practically crying.
You're doing sign language, saying one thing but doing different sign language.
I know I'm telling you something stupid. I'm trying my hardest not to make it sound so dumb.
But so to this whole conversation, as an actor, would you rather have the director, like, really explain, like, help you realize why you should smile more? Or would you rather have them be like, hey, this is a note from the client. I think you're doing amazing, but let's just do one that's a bigger smile. Like, do you Like when the director doesn't believe the note they're giving you, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I love camaraderie with the director. So I like the latter. So if I know, and I'm all actors, I try to pride myself on not being actor-y like this, but you like to hear like, hey, you're doing a good job. I think you're doing a good job. It's just, we have to appease to somebody else. Cause then you have somebody on your side. So I love that. On features in television, sure. It's a totally different ball game. And I get, especially I've been a guest a lot lately, mm-hmm. a guest star, and I've been expressing that to a lot of other friends of mine. I'm a guest in somebody else's house. So I'm doing everything to be a good guest. Mm-hmm. Like I ask to go to the bathroom. I ask if I can sit here. I placate to the other actors who are series regulars. It's their home as well as the director. Being a guest is harder, I think, than being on a commercial trying to decipher what they're saying. On a commercial, I'm like, sure, I'll try this. As a guest star or in indie filmmaking, I feel like you're constantly in this battle of like, I've created this idea, but I'm a guest. Mm-hmm. So how do we, and also as a guest, I don't think you get spoken to a lot by directors. I like to be overly communicated with or at least be able to decipher what's happening.
Yeah. It's hard for a guest spot in particular. I feel like for better or for worse, the less a director talks to you, the better a job you're doing.
Exactly. And I think that's taken. Yeah. And it's brutal because you're like, they're not. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I think that dinner conversation went well. I don't know.
Because most of the time the role is like, you know, the accident's over here, or like the bomb didn't go off.
Well,
you know,
you're a guest star.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But like,
you probably murdered the person.
Yeah, you murdered the person.
Exactly.
Like I did it and I liked it. Right. Yes. You know, but the point is like the detective is about to step in and really like, that's the majority of the scene. Right. And so, yeah, the more it's a hard lesson to learn, especially as an actor, because you're so vulnerable, right? Like you're opening yourself up. You've decided to become the murderer. You've spent a whole week being excited about how you're going to deliver these lines. And like,
well, and we're so narcissistic. I'll be the first person like to throw it out there. It's all like, oh, did I do a good job? Mm-hmm. Oh, I had this idea of how the character was going. And then you look at the director and it's like managing a cruise ship of 1,000 people. And then you have that actor in the corner being like, did I do a good job?
Yeah. If they didn't talk to you, the answer
you
is yes.
You did a good job.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. That's it's awful.
I think that's why it's also, I recommend any creative, an actor to go on the other side of the camera. I think you and go on the other side of casting. It's the best way to get knowledge about how the whole ship is operating. Yeah.
And I think also, remembering what it's like to be that person and like it, whether you're a director or a co-star or another person on set who can, you know, after you're moving on, acknowledge that person, it really goes a long way in terms of just making an actor feel better and like taking that home with themselves, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why, but I always equate it to a dinner party. Mm-hmm. If you're a guest and somebody else is hosting the party, the host is really stressed out. Like, don't ever show up to a dinner party early because they're trying to get their whole house ready. So the director is the host of the party.
Sure.
And you're the guest there, and you might try and have a few minutes one-on-one time with the host, but most likely it's not going to happen.
Right.
So trying to balance out all of those. I just also, as an actor too, I think, as a director, when you give notes, are you trying to, I guess this is a hard question to ask, are you trying just to get from point A to point B, or are you trying to emotionally connect with them, to emotionally get something out of them? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that a clear question?
Yeah, I think the answer is horrible, but it obviously depends on what you're doing. Something I learned is that, I mean, you know, we all talk about like action verbs versus result-oriented directing versus like action-oriented directing, but like you know, on TV, like a lot of times, like the best direction you can give is just like faster and louder, right? Like that. I try when I have time to figure out how to give the actor something to do, as opposed to like a result I want. When I don't have time, or I know what's wrong, like, hey, you're just coming off as like not as sad as like I think you should be, and I don't know what to say, I'll just try to talk to the actor like, hey, like we want this moment to like really land in some way. Can you help me figure out what would make this more sad for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think every performer has a different process. And so when you don't have a really strong relationship with them yet, when they're new, right, that it's hard to kind of know what language to speak with them. And because sometimes you're almost always under the gun and trying to move on, we're just trying to figure out the fastest way to get you where you need to be in a way that is collaborative and helpful and inspires the best work from you.
And comedy is like totally different than drama. You know, like I think there's a time when it's like, okay, guys, let's relax for a second and let's figure this out. And then there's a time where it's like, can you just try saying it like, putting a pause after this word and then punching
that
this
one.
Word?
Yeah. Yeah.
But what about, like, I'm actually curious with you, especially in auditions, you know, when you don't know these directors at all. I've seen directors like give so many notes, you know, for an audition, like, oh, let's just do it one more time, but on this word, punch this, and on this, do this. Like, what's, like, as an actor, how do you like being directed?
I just love being directed. I love collaborating. I love getting out of my own head. I even if a director throws one or two words at me, I'm like, oh, great, great. Because you're thinking on a one-tracked mind. And I think this is also why I'm more curious about directing is I visually see things. So even when I read a script, I can see how I would shoot it. So then as an actor on set, I like to check monitors. I like to watch myself because I like to learn, especially if somebody's, if a director's saying, I'm not getting something or I need you to do this. I'm like, oh, I thought I was doing this. As soon as I see it, I'm like, oh, not doing that at all. So, but very rarely do you have playback on commercials or indie films. Like that's such a privilege.
I also would never show an
actor. Well, it's funny. There's a lot
monitor.
Of directors.
I would never show. Never.
You don't
ever.
Like to show?
Yeah. I totally
show. So then
do you
overly communicate?
Unless it's slow motion. Unless it's like, hey, we can all like get around and watch this cool punch or something. But otherwise, no way.
I like being communicated with, but I also like simplicity and I like emotionally charged action or what I call a secondary focus.
Oh, interesting. What is that?
Primary, secondary focus. So my primary focus is, you know, the person that I'm talking to, the lines that I have to say, the emotion of what's going on. A secondary focus could be like, remember that you're driving.
Oh,
like it's just that simple.
Sure. Okay.
Or like,
you're late to picking up your kid from school.
Yeah.
Or don't forget you murdered this person.
Yeah. Don't forget you murdered this person. Or, oh, that chair that you're sitting in, your grandmother made it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you know, like, so then all of a sudden your brain goes to a different place. And I think as an actor, if you've emotionally prepared to be in a certain place and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's your grandmother's chair. I love that. Like the secondary focus a lot. My acting coach talks about that a lot. And then every once in a while, you'll have a director like Nick Cassavetes. I worked with him, and he was the king of, and I don't know if he would call it this, but of secondary, like primary secondary focus. He would just throw things at me that every time I got directed, I was like, okay. Like it was such a shock thing, but it was always within the element and the realm of which I was doing. And then sometimes he would change the way he would call action, or he wouldn't call action at all. I also think that's really interesting with a director's choice on how they deliver their performers into a scene or their actors into a scene. So I like communicating. I like being, I'm a collaborator. I'm a team player. So I like it.
Do you like knowing where the camera is or what shot is conceptualized for this moment? Is that helpful?
Yes. It depends on the project again, but I am also so curious about directing. I'm so curious about filmmaking and storytelling that especially in the last probably 8 years that I'm like, oh, what lens are you using? Where are you at? And also for an actor.
But does it help your performance?
It does, because especially in emotionally charged scenes, if you're far away and it's a master,
sure.
I want to reserve my tank for the close-up. And that's just a skill that I just learned in the last 7-8 years. Like, I don't remember which project it was, but I remember blowing my load on the master and they were so far away and then they got into for the close-up and I was like, I'm a little tapped. You know, and that was a tough lesson learned on my own. And he was like, you were doing great when we were way over there. And I was like, oh, that's what they... Mm-hmm. So I do like you know, as an actor, you're juggling so many things if you're doing a good job. Nick Cassavetes also said acting, he hates acting because it's like climbing up the stairs. He prefers directing. It's like there's always another stair for acting. You can constantly be like, okay, I'm here emotionally. I'm my primary and secondary focus. The camera's over there. Okay, I'm doing this. Like, there's so many things going in your head, and then action's called and you're like, throw it all away and just be present. Mm-hmm. But the better actors, of course, know where the camera is. Mm-hmm. Some of the talent that I work with on TV, when I'm working with them in the moment, I'm like, well, that wasn't really interesting or connected. Sure. And then you see it on what ends up on screen, you're like, that was brilliant. They know exactly where the camera is. They know exactly how to work it. And that's a muscle that I think a lot of TV actors have.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
And do you think that's a symptom of just logging more hours?
Yeah, yeah. I do. And also, once again, as an actor, you're constantly chasing a job. I'm sure a lot of creators, you're constantly chasing a job. So then once you can get on a set and get comfortable, you all of a sudden bring in the elements of making that job work mm-hmm. better for you. I think as actors, you're constantly in this desperate place instead of looking at like, oh, what lens is that? Like making the camera your friend, making the lighting people your friends, mm-hmm. trying to understand the whole element of storytelling. I think those actors make the most captivating storytellers.
Yeah.
You can learn every element of your craft and what you're doing.
Well, going back to, I mean, as fun as it is to talk about like emotionally charged scenes, I imagine most of our listeners, like that's like the pinnacle, you know, that's like what everyone aspires to. But going back to like the audition tips, just because I think it applies to like a lot of new people too. To me, an actor, one of the like signals that an actor is new and doesn't really know what they're doing in an audition is when they're not quite facing the camera, when they're not aware of sure. where their face is, yeah. where the light is, where the sound is. They'll always be standing against the wall, you know, because they're so scared. They're trying to get as far away from the camera as possible. And so to me, those things, if I was an actor, those things would be super important to me because you can give an amazing performance, but I can't see your eyes.
Totally.
You know, like just know your eye line as close to the camera as you can get it without looking into the lens.
Yeah, there's a reason the reader is sat where they're sat, basically.
Exactly. Right. And I do think learning how to own that room is makes a difference between a working actor and a phenomenal actor and a working actor. Two people can be phenomenal actors. Even people that might not even be new but are coming from theater that don't mm-hmm. understand, like, I'm emoting and doing so much great thing over there. I had a wonderful class where Risa Barman Garcia was like, why does every actor, when they come into a room, pull the chair away from the camera? It's an intimate scene. Get closer to the reader. Get closer mm-hmm. to the camera. Yeah, and I think also with self-tapes and the way the world is working today, there's no reason why an actor shouldn't be at home practicing self-tapes. Like, this is what it looks like when I'm doing this. Oh, I'm way mm-hmm. over here.
Yeah,
it's not picking up.
It's crazy to see the quality. I was just talking with somebody about this today. The quality of self-tapes has increased so much. Like, everyone's shooting on a good-looking DSLR. There's a lot of places around town that have like setups where like things are pre-lit. You know, you flip a switch and all of a sudden you look awesome. You know, it's a great camera. It's a great backdrop. It's great lighting. And so like that is what you were up against when you were sending in a self-tape.
I've got some great taping places if you guys. So I have a guy in the Valley. His name is Amato. And there's also a wonderful guy, Paul's Video.
Mm.
And then there's Intrepid Tapes.
Oh, Intrepid. That's where
he
she
used
is.
To do $1 a minute. And then there's the place called The Self Tape in West Hollywood.
Yes, that's
that
right.
That I just
of.
Discovered. Yeah. And wow.
Yeah,
they're good.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a setup at home also?
I have a mobile setup. So when I go on the road, when I'm here, Amato is my man. I've had like the cops called on me taping with him where I'm like, this, like, you know, you're good when the cops call.
Sure.
Like, and he's just, I love, like, again, I like the collaboration. I don't like going to taping places. They're like, okay, you're done.
Yeah.
I'm like, yep. I'm paying you. I need a second. And I like the feedback. Like, Amato's really great with feedback. the self-tape place is really great with feedback. You can pay for coaching on top of that, which I think is really nice. I just like knowing, like, without going behind and checking every single take that I do, right. Like, hey, how did that feel? So there's
someone
people.
You can trust, basically.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Let's move on, or let's try this. Or once again, I like that secondary focus where somebody's like, hey, what about this? I'm like, ooh, let's try that.
Right. Do you have lights for your mobile setup?
I do. I have a halo light that I'm working with. I just upgrading my phone to a 10, so it's on the 4K. And then,
it's like an LED light that just you put
it's a,
in
it's literally
your,
a halo light like a that you can light. Put. It's a ring light that looks really great. But I'm usually on location this past year. I've worked in LA once in the last 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
So I try to do that one halo light. It's easy.
I want to buy one. That's why I'm asking for selfish reasons for my wife because she's like, I'm spending like $40 every week.
Absolutely. I have a whole kit that somebody sent me, so I'll send it to you.
Oh, yes.
Great. And I'll put it on my show notes.
Yeah.
So if you guys want it, this is just for your phone and it's great. And there's a little mic that you can put in for it as well.
Yes, send it to me because my wife was trying to buy some fluorescent lights and I was like, come on. What is this, 2007?
That's not going to work. That's not going to work.
No, I mean, they were like, you know, with like a softbox.
Sure,
they were
nice, but also they're not.
You can also go to Home Depot and make your own. I've had a couple girlfriends like make their own stuff, but then you're like clamping and doing.
Right,
like,
I just want something, the easiest like LED setup.
Yeah, like $100 plus a microphone.
That can also store in your closet really easy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or for me, I can take it traveling.
Yeah.
These auditions I just did, and I'm sure a lot of auditions nowadays, especially for commercials, have people looking at screens like tablets or phones. And like 80% of the actors, when they were looking at the phone, they would hold the phone like a normal person would hold the phone, you know, down low, and they would be tilting their head down and we would be seeing the top of their head. And I'd be like, let's do it again, but can you just hold the phone way higher so we can see your face?
Buy a printer. That's actually pretty good advice for an actor. I'm not joking.
Seriously. Well, and that's also the thing too is, do you guys bump on if an actor's like, where are you guys framing me? Do you see my eyes? Like,
no,
I overly communicate when I go into a room now. And I even had somebody, a guest on my podcast, say, he doesn't ask. He tells them, hey, you're framing me about right here, right? Like, he directly kind of tells them.
I would maybe
suggest.
Be depending on the personality, I would be like, you know, I would bump against that, actually.
You would bump against, like, having them say, like, do it from
here up. Yeah. I think maybe the other way to do it that wouldn't rub me the wrong way, I should caveat, that's purely just me being weird. But, like, if you're like, hey, is it okay if I move around? Or, like, you know, I'm going to stay pretty still. Like, giving people the operator a heads up. Because for whatever reason, casting directors always buy the worst tripods you've ever seen in your life.
They're so old. They slide down.
Literally, I was talking to a casting director the other day. My tripod that I bought when I got for my 16th birthday is still better than literally every single casting director's tripod I've ever seen in my life. It cost $100.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy them
all.
That's
why I almost prefer going to my taping places sometimes instead of going in with the casting director. Yeah. They have 5,000 things on their head and their mind. Their cameras aren't great. They're also reading with you and doing the camera.
So we're going to start a GoFundMe account for the Los Angeles casting directors.
So when you guys read scripts or when you guys get a commercial, like when the job has been handed to you, how do you storyboard out? As in a commercial, is it kind of like, do the clients kind of tell you what they already want? Like,
so
how
in
much
a commercial,
creative control do you
in
have?
In a commercial, we'll get boards pretty frequently.
So you just have to shoot exactly what's on the board.
Well, I'll tell you. So this current project I have, I get the scripts, and the scripts have like 3 images per script that are kind of like and give you the tone. Then later on, they send me boards. There's like 6 boards per script. And then these specific spots I'm doing, I'm imagining there would be like about 20 shots per spot. So then I go and I sit with the storyboard artist and we reboard every spot. And then I share those with the agency. They share them with the client. And
so, you'll have like a sense of tone and maybe hero shots. Like if there's a product shot or something like that. There are certain shots that you kind of intuit, you know, like, oh, we have to get this basically. But sometimes you get to reboard. Sometimes, depending on the budget, sometimes you just can get away with boarding it yourself. But the tone and feel and a lot of the shots are already predetermined, for sure.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm doing this new thing where I just, whatever seems right for that commercial, I'll do. So I was just pitching on this other commercial. I didn't get it, but it was like, the idea was there's like this really long couch and the camera is like scanning across the couch as different people are on it. And if I would have gotten it, I would have probably like tried to do like a 3D rendering in my computer of how it would look. I've tried to figure it out in some way or do little models and just shoot it on my iPhone. But like, you know, the boards work for some things when it's like a conversation between two people. Mm-hmm. But if it's like a visual trick, I'll try to shoot a test or something and show it to the client.
So then in commercials, do you feel like you have a lot of creative control as the director? Or it's the creation's kind of handed to you.
I mean, the strongest illustration I can think of is if you go to like Ad Age, right, which is like the advertising, you know, publication of note, right? Like they reference it in Mad Men and it's still around today, right? And you look at the credits on a commercial, the director is about the middle, right? Oh. So like you've got executive producers, you've got creative directors, you've got like all of those agency people, the copywriter, those people are all credited before the director.
And then what about for episodic? Because I just realized the other day, or somebody told me this, that if you direct a pilot, you are given EP credit for the rest of the series because you created the tone.
Those are the jobs. Like a pilot episode, that is it. That is the best thing.
Because you get to put your creative spin on it. So now is the studio coming to you and giving you boards or ideas? Are you going to the studio and saying, this is the show I visually want to make?
Yeah, so in episodic, you rarely get to board anything.
Right. Well, so we had two directors on kind of recently that directed pilots. Tony Ascenda, who you're friends with, right? So he pitched the idea that American Vandal, which is his show, is going to feel like The Jinx and feel like Making a Murderer, right? So I think that came from him. He did direct all the episodes, but even if he didn't, they would all kind of look like that, right? And then Paul Briganti, who did Adam Ruins Everything, his idea was to make it, he was inspired by Citizen Kane, how you can use a few camera moves without cuts to create all these new scenes. And so I think those guys brought like a ton of stuff to what the show looks like. But now everyone else that directs it, like Matt Pollock, who's been on the show a lot, has to kind of match the style of Adam Ruins Everything that Paul created.
Yeah. It kind of depends on, like, cable oftentimes will have one director do the entire season.
Well, that's what happened. I did True Detective, and Cary Fukunaga did the first whole season, and I truly believe that was the biggest success because of him having creative control over all eight episodes. Season two, we had several different directors coming in on that season. I'm interested to see what they do with season three, but I haven't seen anywhere in the trades yet that they've locked in just one. Mm-hmm. But for miniseries and stuff like that, I mean, Handmaid's Tale, it's not just one for the whole entire.
Sure, that's true.
And that was Reed Morano. She directed the pilot.
She directed the pilot and I think did a couple other episodes throughout. But
and she's a DP, so she really created the look of that show very strongly. And I know she's, you know, obviously still an EP on it. So I think everything she did in that first season is all the other directors are carrying on. I have worked with Reed. She's like a genius.
You
and
have.
She shot, not, she wasn't shooting for me. I was just like doing something else on that set. But she was like pregnant and shooting this movie and doing
Which movie were you on?
It's called Free Samples. It's kind of a small movie. Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
She's like, and she could do with like one light what, like every other DP would need like 20 lights to do it. Like to me, that's what's like amazing about really good DPs is they don't need all the equipment in the world.
They're not relying on other people to make the shot that they need.
Yeah. And they also care about the performance. You know, I've worked with a few DPs where it's like they'll give a note like, they were walking really slow. I didn't like buy that they were walking where they're going. Cause their walk is motivating a camera move or something. To me, that's like an amazing DP that is using the visuals to tell the story. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I give just a few last tips? Because
in
case anyone that listens to your podcast ever auditions for us, just auditioning tips, random ones
that come to
my mind.
One,
don't wear anything crazy, especially in the commercial world. Like just go as like a normal person, like okay, no so chokers when your agent, or crazy
when your
hair.
Like, oh, okay, so this is a nurse. You don't want? Do you want people coming in scrubs, or you want things that are scrub like? Yes. Okay.
That's my vote, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I feel like your agents are always like, wear this. I'm like, that's not really the way you want to go with that.
Don't come in a costume. Come in something that evokes the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mind scrubs.
Scrubs are actually the one exception.
But if you came with a nurse's hat, I'd be like, can you take the hat off? You know, don't wear, people wear fake glasses like all the time for like nerd roles or whatever. And like, come on, guys, let's get over that.
So don't accessorize, like outrageously accessorize.
Yeah. And then there's the thing that I think directors are totally split on. Like my wife would never, ever use a prop in an audition. And I love props. Like if someone like pulls out their phone, brings an Xbox controller or whatever they need.
That is like a hard no for me.
Right. And Matt's a hard
fucking
no.
Fucking so. Bonkers. Sorry. So I hope I can swear on your podcast.
Oh yeah. We cuss a lot.
Do not bring an Xbox controller.
Like my daughter's fake sword. Sure.
Yeah. Look, a fake sword. Don't be silly. But if it's like...
I use my phone for a lot of stuff.
You can use your phone? If you're flipping a cigarette or something and it makes you feel better to have a cigarette, like, to me, it's like, just sell me on this character, you know? And it's if you're, like, moving your hands like a French mime to stack boxes, it's just silly.
Here's the thing. Again, down to the personality thing. Bringing in a prop is a little bit of a red flag to me. And I want to speak for Oren because obviously he loves them. But, like, it feels like, oh, you're maybe a little weird. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, absolutely.
Like, I'm going to pull out my fake mustache for this next audition.
It's like a clown job for this point.
It's just a hint at that. It's like, okay, this person might be high maintenance and I can't deal with that. Yeah. So like that's why your phone is okay. Your script is okay. Go ahead and use that.
Oh, yeah. You can finger guns
if you need to or something like that stuff is fine. But like if it's reasonable that you would have it on your person, I think that's in the realm of okay. But for the most part, please don't bring something from home. Don't.
Right. And please hold your script if you don't know all the lines. Like, I can't tell you how annoying it is when someone like forgets the lines halfway through and can't find their script, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Like, I'd much rather them just hold the script and never look at it. I would never hold that against you for holding a script.
Don't wave it around too much. And also, actually, I was going to say...
Giving too much direction for one take, okay?
You look like a doofus if you're holding your phone. You like to reference it on your script. I was going to say that before.
Oh,
you
look like a doofus. Literally, if people are looking on their phones for their lines, mm-hmm. having their scripts on their
phones. The best looking, coolest, most confident people still kind of, you look like a nerd when you look at your phone.
Yeah.
It's like riding a Segway.
I'm with you. I think that's kind of weird. And it also is going to put a weird light on
What's wrong with Segways? I ride one all the time.
I defy you to find someone who looks cool riding a Segway. They're so fun.
A BBC film that I have coming out, I ride a Segway. And I have to say, I murdered that Segway. Right. I Segway trained.
Okay.
And then it might be one of my favorite characters.
And you think you look cool in that scene.
I had a scarf that flapped in the wind. And I went really fast. And I was able to do like... turns and shit on
it. I can't wait to be wrong, but I still feel confident.
Now, Laurel Ann thought she was really cool, and so did everybody else that day on set. But, you know, Segways,
listen,
they're out for judgment.
Listen, I happy to be wrong, but...
Okay, so don't look at your phone.
Don't look at your phone.
I wish we could segue out, but we're not done with our list. And be friendly, but don't, like... ask me like what neighborhood I live in. Like don't put on a show, you know?
Yeah, let us lead in terms of how.
Let the director, agent, anybody lead the conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, and be ready for the question, oh, who are you in True Detective?
Know your resume.
Yeah, know your resume. And also,
don't make up that shit.
Yeah.
Or if you do, be a good actor.
Can I tell you how many times?
I will call you on it for sure.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not even meaning to. You're like, oh, cool, you're in this thing. And they're like, yeah, if you're going to be embarrassed about something on your resume and you're going to feel like an asshole when you have to talk about it, take it off.
Yes.
Have you ever had an actor be like, oh, who are you in True Detective? And they'll be like, oh, well, we did a scene for like a film, you know, a thesis film or something, or like a film school thing.
Oh, really?
I'll be like, oh, okay. So you weren't like on the actual show. And then they'll be like, no. And then I'll be like, okay, and whenever you're ready.
Yeah. And I have nothing else to say.
You know, I actually did something which I feel like was not cool.
Yeah.
The other day I had this actor audition and he had a beard and I wanted to see if he would look younger without, you know, facial hair. And I was like, You know, what do you look like? Would you be cool with shaving? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, my headshot is, you know, shaved. And I looked at his headshot and it was obviously like he printed it out at home on his printer, like on glossy paper or whatever, but it was really dark. And I was like, oh man, just, you know, on some unsolicited advice, you should like just brighten up your headshot. It's like really hard to see. And I feel like I threw him so off yeah. that he like could not do the audition. He's like, oh, okay. And it was like him and a girl auditioning and he just, I don't know.
Yeah. And you know what? For the record, actually, I think that it's important for actors to know, like, you would have, if he had killed it, like, we don't care about that headshot. We don't right. care about yeah. if you're actually holding a phone. We don't care about any of the stuff that we're nitpicking right now. If you nail it, we want you to win. We want you to crush it. And or if, you know, you have a fake role on your resume or a misleading one. All of yeah. that stuff is a pass as soon as you nail it. But
if you're on the edge or if we need to pick three roles for each person.
If you're going to be made uncomfortable if we accidentally bring it up, then that's a liability for you. You know, we want you to win. But like if you come in with a crappy looking headshot and then we're like, oh, that's weird. And that's going to throw you. You're going to miss the audition for that.
I also just think that a lot of actors, which is why I also created the podcast, is like a lot of creatives have a hard time managing their business. So mm-hmm. like that's part of your business. That's your calling card. If your calling card is dark, then of course he's insecure about it because he knows it's probably not good either. So you struck a chord with his insecurity.
Definitely.
That's the hard thing I think with acting too is like you're such an empathetic person, but having the boundaries up where you don't let that stuff come in, but you can still do your job. I think it takes experience or a shitload of confidence from the get-go where you're like, if he was so cocky and he was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, my printer's busted.
Yeah, whatever. It wouldn't have been.
Book me and I'll buy a new one.
Yeah.
He would have killed it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. So true. Any other tips while we're here?
Matt, anything you hate actors doing? Well, actually, can you just give us maybe a few things that you hate directors doing?
Oh, yeah. Or that would throw you maybe or like.
I have had some, these directors will remain nameless because they're big directors. I have had directors throw complete temper tantrums on set where one yelled at a sound guy who was deep, like well into his 60s. He's clearly been doing this job for like 40 years. I don't think any director throwing around his ego like that ever helps a project. And by the way, that $35 million project tanked. Mm-hmm. And I was glad that it did because he was so horrible on set. So I just don't, I have a hard time, I guess, with ego. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm always curious how directors think of themselves because I look at them as helming the ship. And if number one in the person, if the captain has got a bad attitude, the whole thing's going to suffer. So that's always my biggest pet peeve. And then just direction that seems mindless or direction like I know that they might be frustrated with me because they're not getting what they want, but they're not taking the time. I don't like when people scream across the room. I think that's really rude.
Yeah. What if they're like at the monitor? Do you mind if they're doing series? Like, hey, let's just try another one, but let's just do it a little bit faster. And maybe like you think it's funny what you're saying, you know? Like,
I don't think that's a problem. And that's also probably normally commercial where you're doing series or actually even sometimes TV shows where you're doing series. But I've also seen some really well-known actors on New Girl. Somebody was giving Zoe... constant.
They alt a lot of
a
that
lot
show.
Of like, do it like this, do it like this, do it like this. And then it was so brilliant. She was like, I think we're good and I've done it enough. And I was like, oh, girl.
Sure.
Yeah.
Snap.
It's also her
she
show.
She gets to do it.
It's also her show.
She's the new girl.
She is the new girl. But I thought that was so great as an actor just to be like, boundaries. I really like the intimacy of I like when a director's coming towards me and like, ooh, okay, what is he or she gonna say? And if they talk to me in an intimate space, I feel like I can be more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even if you think that you're doing a series from far away, who knows what kind of day that they're having or how they're shaky they're feeling. I have very little pet peeves. I do like
you know what? I want to talk to you a little bit about the distance thing, because it is a thing that drives me insane as well.
What, yelling like from the monitor?
Yeah. I know that sucks. But what's, and I do my very, very best to get a wireless monitor and have my village on wheels so that I can get in close and all sorts of stuff. What's interesting, though, is that a director can't move the monitor, right? Like, there are union rules. It's like he can maybe, or she can ask, you know, their team to move things closer or to specify up in advance. But, like, on a TV show, it's not like you necessarily get to do a custom rig every single time. Sometimes you're lucky, and sometimes they get to do that. But it is this funny thing of, like, we feel crappy about it, too, in a way that's interesting. You know, like, we know, like, this, we're trying to craft an intimate performance or even just be funny, and, like, shouting is the least reasonable way to do that, you know?
But I think it's also, we're all adults, and hopefully everybody that you've hired are actors in which you like them. And shouting from a monitor, sure, when you're, like, trying to do something funny or get to something, I think if you're not getting what you want, the intimacy is required.
Right, right.
And sometimes I'll say to an actor, I'll try to meet everyone at least in the morning if I haven't met them and be like, hey, just so you know, we're shooting way too much for one day. We're going to go really fast. If I don't give you any notes, it means I love it. I might shout, you know, from really far away. I might give you a line reading if we're, like, really late and the client just wants something. And I just try to kind of put it all up front so that they're not offended when I do it later on. So they know it's not mm-hmm. something personal. It's just something that I might have to do to get us through our day, you know?
And I love that. I had two showrunners on the show as a bonus episode last month, and he said something so brilliant. He was like, if you come in and you disarm the crowd by telling them, like, your weaknesses or mm-hmm. things that you know about yourself, then everybody's on the same team. If you come in and say, okay, this is what we're working with, this is what's going to go, then everybody's willing and part of that collaboration and all on the same page. I think it's just when everybody's on different pages and you're not.
Yeah.
I truly, as an actor, have a 90% of the time leave set feeling useless. And I am doing my best to work on my ego with that. And I think that sometimes there's wonderful directors that just as you're walking out, like, hey, thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Just that, where you can walk away and be like, oh, okay, like, I contributed today. But 9 times out of 10, they're really busy doing 5,000 other things. And then you're like, why did I? Okay. Okay.
Well, yeah. That's also the adrenaline low. I mean, that happens to us when we're, like, crazy busy for a week. And then the next day we're like, oh, what's my next job?
Show crash.
Show crash. That's a good way of putting it. I always call it offset blues. Whenever I come home, especially if I've done a film and I'm gone for like 3 to 6 weeks.
You went away to camp.
I went away to camp and then nobody knows your experience. In your real life.
Even in like as
like
a kid.
This one time?
And you're like, Mom.
Nobody gets it. Nobody gets it. I continue to just strive in wanting to be on sets with people that want to collaborate and play. Mm-hmm. Even if it is on a short thing where it's like, we can't do as much as we want to, but we all know we want to. Okay, yay, let's go have a fun day shooting. I think a lot of people bring too much intensity and ego.
Yeah, it's the whole money part of this whole thing.
It's that money thing. Make that money.
It sucks. So are you guys cool with jumping into our unpaid endorsements?
Unpaid endorsements.
My wife and I, we have a kid. And a lot of times we have trouble finding babysitters on Saturday nights because I guess people like to do stuff on Saturday nights. So something we've been doing that's really fun and very inexpensive is putting puzzles together, 1,000-piece puzzles. Have I talked about this before?
No, but I love a good puzzle.
It takes about, I imagine amazing puzzle solvers can do it in like 5 or 6 hours. It takes us about 10 hours to do a 1,000-piece puzzle.
You spread it out over a day or two.
Are you drinking wine and conversing while doing this?
You know, we don't converse as much as you would think because we're like really...
You're in it.
We watch that Gary Shandling documentary while we put it together. We'll watch like... I think we watched the entire season of like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy on Netflix.
That's worth paying attention to though.
Yeah, which by the way, do you know not all the guys that they are doing over are they're not all straight?
The reboot is just called Queer Eye.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I was paying more attention to the puzzle, I guess, than the title. We also got this thing. We went to, for our anniversary, we went to Palm Springs with our daughter and we brought a puzzle. And so I got this thing. It's a puzzle mat. It's really just like a piece of felt with like an inflatable roller that you can put on it. So you basically, you do the puzzle on the felt and then you can roll it up if you're not done and travel with it.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's a puzzle mat. It kind of, it's not like amazing, but it mostly works.
It keeps it all together, what you've already put together?
Yeah, and then you unravel it and all, even the stray pieces are in the same, kind of in the same
that's
place you left them
nice.
In.
Yeah.
See, there's things like that. You're like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, sure.
Little products
you
like
don't
that.
Even have to travel with that. It's just like if you want your dining room table back.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
I went through a puzzle phase with my wife, and I remember one morning we woke up and we were both thinking about the puzzle.
Well, we'll be like, we today, like I was really stressed out. I had all this work to do. She was like about to go to Pilates or something. And she's like, you want to just like work on this for like 10 minutes? And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, put like 20 pieces in and left.
And you feel accomplished. And did you roll it back up and put it away?
No, we have it on like a piece of foam core. Right now, it's easier than the felt. The felt, it's harder to slide things
sure.
around on.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Matt, you got anything?
I do, actually. This is going to be our strongest endorsement segment ever. Listeners will know, I love going to the cemetery for movie screenings. I love it. It's the best. It's my very favorite thing. We have our chair. We have the whole setup.
The Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Hollywood Forever. Oh, yeah, yeah. I should clarify that. In Los Angeles,
you can go to the, cemetery,
go to the cemetery
and watch
movies outside.
Yeah.
But you could also go to museums and parks all over the city. There's screenings on the weekend. You can see Ferris Bueller every weekend of the summer, basically. But Casablanca was this weekend, and it'd been a long time since I've seen Casablanca.
It's really good.
It's so good. It's like such an obvious thing to say, but
I think it's better than Citizen Kane.
I guess really what I'm endorsing is getting over the idea that Casablanca as a film feels, you know, like homework or something. It's incredibly entertaining. It's airtight. It moves super fast. The plotting is perfect, basically. And it's filled with jokes. It's either jokes or heartbreak or action or political intrigue on every line.
And it's about World War II, and it was made
During
World War II.
World War II.
And it came out during World War II. And it's like, you're like, how could they have insight, so much insight about something that's going on right now?
It's crazy. So,
and it doesn't feel like, well, I mean, we won the war. So I guess
maybe
it is politically charged, but it feels kind of not politically charged.
Yeah. So it feels like an obvious endorsement, but guys, rewatch Casablanca.
Do you think you were more invested too because you were outside and you're at the cemetery?
I think I was more likely to fall asleep because you have a little bit of wine.
A good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
That's a good one. You guys had really good ones. I am in such doc world right now. I watched 25 documentaries this weekend, 26 maybe. So there's this short one called 3000. It's basically it's 6 minutes, which I think is really hard to move somebody in 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's about this young man documenting. It's a mother's love, and it's literally him moving to New York, and she is in China, somewhere in Asia. Don't get mad at me for not knowing this. I don't remember. But it's all her phone calls to him, like, hey, how are you? Just checking in over these gorgeous videos that he's made of New York City. And you can feel his feelings through his like short videos and vignettes that he's doing. And then it's him going home to see her. It's so simple. I'm a mom. I mean, it got me after watching 25 of them. It got me so deeply. And the way he shot it was so beautiful. Like the opening scene is just shooting up at trees and watching a plane go by, and and it's all in subtitles. Mm-hmm. It's not a language that I know, but it was so beautiful. That and this other documentary that I don't know if a lot of people know about it, but since we're in LA, called Queen Mimi. And it's, have you guys heard about this?
No, I don't know it.
So it's a woman who was homeless on Montana Avenue, who refused to call herself homeless, and then got a job at a laundromat and lived inside the laundromat. And then Zach Galifianakis bought her an apartment, and Renee Zellweger paid for the furniture inside the apartment.
I was going to say Montana is like a pretty bougie street.
It's very bougie.
It's Santa Monica, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like Huckleberry is on Montana, right? I think.
It's so cool just to see how she affected people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not just the celebrities that are in it. It's people that would come in and give her hugs, and she would do people's laundry inside the laundromat. The laundromat guy didn't even have her own salary. People were coming in and just requesting her because they liked her so much. But it's her relationship and what she's been able to give to the people that are coming in and what you don't know about her. I don't want to give too much away, but I was crying. I mean, a good doc will get you. And this guy made it with his, you have a Zoom 6, right? He had a Zoom 5 and a little mic, and that's how he did that. And then they had a camera going, but it wasn't overly done. It wasn't invasive. It was really well done.
Can we find them on Vimeo or?
So 3000 is on Vimeo. Mm-hmm. And then Queen Mimi's on Netflix. He shot it for like not a lot of money and sold it to Netflix for a lot of money.
Love it. Love it.
Cool. I hope he gave that money to the laundry.
I'm supposed to meet with him sometime in the next week, and I'm going to wonder if how much he gave to Queen Mimi.
That's awesome.
Right?
Cool. Well, if we want to find out more about you, do you have a website or anything?
Yeah, alishaoxse.com. So it's alishaoxse.com.
Also on the show notes, just
in case. Yes, because the spelling is unusual. And then the show's at That One Audition on all social media outlets and at Alisha Oxy everywhere.
Love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you can find out more about us at justshootapod.com. You can email us at justshootapod@gmail.com or tweet at us at justshootapod. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, iTunes. Reviews are awesome.
Patreon is even better.
Patreon.com/justshootapod. You're on iTunes, obviously.
I'm on iTunes, Stitchers, everywhere, Google Play.
Leave a review for both of us.
Leave a review for this bonus episode.
Look at that.
What did you learn? Did you like it?
Yeah, let us know. And you can tweet at me at Mr. Matt Enloe.
And I'm at Smitey Pyleg. This episode was edited by Christopher Robert Gray. Our producer is Madeline Rosewatt. Our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And this music
was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.